already passed since I was sent to the mine. When I first saw him, the man was wearing the kind of uniform they gave to all the Russian prisoners. He was involved in repair work at the station with a group of some 10 of his compatriots. They were breaking up rocks with sledgehammers and spreading the crushed rock over the roadway. The clanging of the hammers against the hard rocks reverberated throughout the area. I was on my way back from delivering a report to mine headquarters when I passed the station. The non-commissioned officer directing the work stopped me and ordered me to show my pass. I took it from my pocket and handed it to him. The sergeant, a large man, focused a suspicious gaze on the pass for some time. But he was obviously illiterate. He called over one of the prisoners at work on the road and told the man to read it aloud. This particular prisoner was different from the others in his group. He had the look of a well-educated man. And it was him. When I saw him, I could feel the blood drain from my face. I could hardly breathe. Literally, I felt as if I were underwater, drowning. My breath would not come. This educated prisoner was none other than the Russian officer who had ordered the Mongolian soldiers to skin Yamamoto alive on the bank of the Kalka River. He was emaciated now, almost bald and missing a front tooth. Instead of his spotless officer's uniform, he wore filthy prison garb. And instead of shiny boots, he wore cloth shoes that were full of holes. The lenses of his glasses were dirty and scratched. The frames were twisted. But it was the same man, without a doubt. There was no way I could have failed to recognize him, and he, in turn, was staring hard at me, his curiosity first aroused, no doubt, by my own stunned expression. Like him, I had also aged and wasted away in the 9 intervening years. I even had a few white hairs now, but he seemed to recognize me nonetheless. A look of astonishment crossed his face. He must have assumed that I had rotted away in the bottom of a Mongolian well, and I, of course, never dreamed that I would run across him in a Siberian mining camp wearing prisoner's garb. A moment was all it took him to regain his composure and begin reading my pass in calm tones to the illiterate sergeant, who had a machine gun slung from his neck. He read my name, my job as translator, my qualification to move among camp areas, and so on. The sergeant returned my pass and signaled me with a jerk of the chin to go. I walked on a short way and turned around. The man was looking at me. He seemed to be wearing a faint smile, though it might have been my imagination. My legs were shaking, and I couldn't walk straight for a while. All the terror I had experienced 9 years before had come back to me in an instant. I imagined that the man had fallen from grace and been sent to this Siberian prison camp. Such things were not at all rare in the Soviet Union back then. Vicious struggles were going on within the government, the party, and the military, and Stalin's pathological suspiciousness pursued the losers without mercy. Stripped of their positions, such men would be tried in kangaroo courts and either executed or sent to concentration camps. Though finally which group was the more fortunate, only a god could say. An escape from death led only to slave labor of unimaginable cruelty. We Japanese prisoners of war could at least hope to return to our homeland if we survived. But exiled Russians knew no such hope. Like the others, this man would end up with his bones rotting in the soil of Siberia. Only one thing bothered me about him, and that was that he now knew my name and where to find me. Before the war, I had participated, unknowingly to be sure, in that secret operation with the spy Yamamoto, crossing